Welcome to WFHR's Director's Cut for this December 19th, Session 6. Your host and program director here, James J. Mailoff. I'm joined by my partner in art, Seth. Seth, how's it going?
Things are going well. There's snow on the ground, unfortunately. I'm avoiding thinking about that as much as I can.
I think that's
and
a really
failing.
Good call.
And
yeah,
failing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. See, I hear you there. Yes. Yeah. We are joined today by Bria Ann Krieger, local author, podcaster, all-around amazing human being. We appreciate her joining us today. And Bria, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you guys? Glad to be back on so soon.
You know, Seth brought up something in our kind of pregame here about this being a bit of a callback, a bit of a follow-up story. And I really like that. I think that's really cool. And it's part of the reason that you're joining us today, Bria. And we appreciate the time.
And I hope that this is something we can do on a regular basis, too, with everyone who comes on this show. Hint, hint, everybody who should be on our show. Yes. We actually, just as a tease here, we do have a schedule of hopeful guests coming up here at the beginning of the year, and we're really excited about that, so stay tuned. We got plenty of really interesting conversations coming up here on Director's Cut.
Yeah, we might be able to touch on that schedule if time allows as we're talking here. Mm-hmm. And I should journalistically mention that Bria is my oldest, is my daughter, and I am her dad. So if we come across like that, that's why. That's because of why. Journalistically, we have to mention that.
That's
not
true.
Because I just wanted to mention it so I could brag about her a little bit.
Not at all.
That's not why I did that. Boy, I got a lot to brag about too, hon. Because part of the reason you are joining us today is because you just recently published a new book.
Yes, I felt so much gratitude that you guys wanted to have me back on to talk about it because I literally just published it a few days ago. So it's very exciting.
It's pretty cool. So when it comes to this story, Bria, there's a couple of things I'd like to ask about. But first, can you tell us like a synopsis of the story?
Yes, of course. I'd love to give you guys the synopsis for this quirky short story. Well, the title is The World Ends Christmas Day, so there's a lot to chew on. And here is the synopsis. It would take a Christmas miracle to steer the mighty Eos asteroid from Earth, but it ain't happening. Otto and Edda, the black sheep amongst the chaotic and panic-struck human race, decide to embrace their last holiday the best way they know how, together and away from people. The World Ends Christmas Day is a mixture of apocalyptic folly and fluffy wholesomeness, blended and poured into a holiday cup with a dollop of tragicomedy on top. Call it The End of Days, Code Red, Armageddon, Last Judgment, Curtain Call, or their personal favorite, Merry Doomsday. So, that is the synopsis.
Gosh, that's good.
A nice, cheery Christmas story.
the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Happy endings. And
Bria, when you first told me about this, I think it was actually like a couple hours into you having the idea, or maybe the next day. And I it didn't leave me after you told me it. I was chewing on it and thinking about it and just all the different angles you might take this story. And I really cannot tell you how much I can't wait to read this. Where did this idea come from?
It was actually a combination of two things that had been rolling around in my head for a few days. One was the thought of writing a holiday-type story since December was right around the corner at the time. And the other was a song that had been stuck in my head for a while that I enjoyed a lot, which was As the World Caves In by Matt Maltese. So I was in the kitchen just doing some chores, and the story just kind of hit me, and I ran to my notebook. I started drafting, doing research, and creating character boards on Pinterest. And I started writing the story on November 11th, and I finished exactly a month later, which I've never done before, and I was a little surprised, to be honest.
Mm. Wow, that is, anyone who's enjoyed the creative process knows, that doesn't happen very often.
No. And I'm not at all jealous. I'm not at all jealous or frustrated by my own creative process. I'm not at all. That is amazing, hon. That is really, really cool. But that also speaks to, like you said, you haven't had that happen before. Seth's comment there is certainly noteworthy. And as a writer, I can speak to the same thing. That usually happens, or something like that happens, if you have something and you really got something good. You really are enjoying this, what you think. Whether it's a huge success or not for you, it is a success. This is a good idea. You mentioned that doesn't happen to you before. What was there a key thing about this one that just brought you in, or was it the idea along with it being this time of year that kind of got the ball rolling that way?
Yeah, maybe it was a combination of things. I think that I was just really energized by the idea of it. And I also think that since I was already originally thinking about making it a short story, it wasn't as daunting as a full novel.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. Now, with the story and the synopsis that you gave us, the plot, it does seem like it could be a little bit darker. But knowing you and knowing the way that you write and reading your work, I know that that isn't where you would, you know, start and end. Would you say that this is one of those stories where it's got a little bit of all that, a little bit of, you know, seriousness to it, a little bit of down, a little bit of up, a little bit of hope?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I wanted it to be more of like a dark humor story, but I've noticed that when I start writing something, I unintentionally make it very deep, like emotionally deep, and I don't mean to, but there is a lot of that in the book, given like the circumstances that the characters are going through. But there are chapters where it's just them celebrating Christmas and loving one another, and yeah, so there's a good balance, I think, but it is in the title what's kind of inevitably going on, so the reader can be a little warned of that.
I think that's a really good point to bring up, too, because you're going into this story knowing that it's going to have some tones like that to it. And, you know, for everybody that loves, you know, happy-go-lucky Hallmark kind of Christmas stories, there are people that like Christmas stories but want maybe a little more realistic one, or maybe just a different telling.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That was something I was really excited about, because I had never written a holiday story or an apocalyptic type story. And to mash two very different things together, I was excited to see what that would look like and what people's reactions would be.
You know, there was something that happened to me when I was young and I was first starting to write. I would say about 16, and I won this award from Lincoln, Best of Prose Award, for this short story that I wrote. And I was you know, taken back by it. And I had a writing class that semester. And I'd come in, and my teacher, Mr. Slaby, I'll never forget this, he says to me, pulls me aside after he got class going. And he gave everybody a project, and he pulls me over, and he's like, "Well, James, I noticed that you won the Bloodstone Award last year and everything. That's, I read your story, and I thought it was very good. And what's next?" And I was, and I didn't have anything. And then I started writing for him and in the class, and he liked what I was doing. But I grew up being told, write what you know. So all my stories were street stories, and they tended to lean pretty dark, and trying to bring a light to that. And he liked that, and he thought it was good. And he told me, okay, those are really good. Is that all you can do? Mm. Like, is that all you can do is write street stories? And I thought about that, and I was like, oh, I don't want to be just a street story writer. I don't want to be labeled as an actor. All I ever wanted was, you know, be able to say about me, he could play anybody. Mm-hmm. I want the same thing as a writer creatively. So I forced myself, I started pushing myself to write every genre, every type of genre, not right then and there, but by the end of my career, I wanted to be able to say I did something from every genre. I actually started working on a Western that day that I'm still kind of putting together and doing touches on all these years later everything. Was that is that something that you as a writer, as a creative, that you've thought about or, you know, kind of helped stem this story?
Oh, that's a really cool perspective to bring up, and I liked hearing that background that you just gave us. I think that for me personally, I really do love writing outside of things I've experienced, but I think research helps with that, and I'm also have a pretty active imagination, and I kind of close my eyes and imagine myself as that character and what I think I would see and feel.
I like that. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
The novelist Gore Vidal once said, it's fine to write what you know, but what you should be writing is with your imagination. Mm-hmm. You should be able to imagine yourself in different situations or other things. Don't feel you should be limited. Like you were both just saying, by what you can only write what you know. Well, no, you can. You can always use your imagination. Research is important, of course. Although researching the end of the world is kind of hard. That hasn't happened yet. But still, again, you have to use your imagination for something like that.
A big fan of Mr. Vidal's, and I really love Mr. Slaby as a teacher. He kind of dropped the ball there. I could have used that quote. That would have been very helpful. That would have been really helpful, Mr. Slaby. I don't think he's actually with us anymore. But that's a good quote, man. Thank you for bringing that.
Yeah, thanks, Beth.
When it came to the characters' names, I really fell in love with them right away. Can you give those to us once more? And was there a reason for those names?
Ooh, yes. Thank you for saying that, because I really liked their names, too. So the story is in first-person perspective, and our narrator is Otto, and his wife, the secondary character, is named Etta. And I don't remember... I think I might have thought of Otto first, and I just thought it was a very timeless-sounding name. So I thought, I'll just look through like a list of vintage-type female names. And then when I saw Etta, I just thought it was perfect, since they both have kind of the same amount of letters in their name, and they both have like two T's in the middle of their name. So it was just very cute.
It's so good. They sound so good together. I feel like I've known a couple by that name, even though I haven't. I don't even know if I've ever met anybody by either of those names, but it seems like that kind of, they just fit so well together. And with that, you mentioned that you came up with Otto right away. I know this has happened to me, and I've talked to other writers that this can happen with, where sometimes you come up with a name and the character kind of gets developed from that, and vice versa sometimes. But in this scenario, is that how this happened? You come up with the name and the character started being developed right then and there?
Yeah, I guess that it kind of does happen that way. It's almost like this unexplainable, like, writer magic that happens. And a lot of times writers will say, like, the characters took over the story, and it sounds very bizarre to anyone who isn't a writer, but it's so true.
Yep.
It really does happen, those crazy imaginary friends.
You know, Seth brought up something too, doing research and you're touching on, as a writer, the empathy and how you put yourself in your characters. With a subject matter like this, did you find, having palate cleansers kind of after you were done writing or wrapping up from the session that you were having? Like, okay, I need something to make me smile. I need something to make me laugh here or anything. Did you need to do any of that?
Yeah, I think that is actually something that I was talking about with my writing community, because I didn't realize like how heavy it was going to hit me, because you, like you were saying, you really do put yourself in that position, and with the world ending, that's like that's the biggest one. I did start like a new comfort like TV show, and spending time with my loved ones, that helps a lot, and also just kind of talking about what I had written in the previous chapter of my fiance was a good way of just like processing, kind of getting it out of my head.
And you know, the I asked that question, and really these questions we're going to ask some more of Bria when we come back from break. Because I want to brag about my daughter. It's all because I want other creative people out there to know that this process is attainable, that that there are ways of doing this that are helpful. And I appreciate you bringing up a writing community of friends. I think whatever creative world you're in, having allies, people that are maybe in that field or in a similar field, or just creative people to talk to vent to, even, is almost just as vital in the creative process as the actual creating. The older I get, the more it seems like that is a necessity as much as it is a luxury. Do you feel the same way, Bria? Is that something that you've noticed?
Yeah, absolutely. I know you guys can't see me, but I was not into everything you were saying. It's absolutely true.
I want to talk to you about the publication steps and the process of that, and what you got coming up and some other things. But yeah, we do need to pay some bills. We needed to take a commercial break here, so we'll go ahead and do that. Well, soon, Seth, or is that...
No, we can take a break right now.
Okay.
We can go ahead and take a break, and we will be back shortly with two Director's Cut.
Welcome back, everyone, to Director's Cut. Hope you are having a great Sunday night out there. Thank you so much for joining us, or whatever night you're listening to our show, of course.
That's right.
We are being joined by Bria Ann Krieger. She is a local author, podcaster. You can find Bria's work podcast-wise. We'll tell you where you can find that in a moment, but I do want to mention her pen name, B.A. McRae. That is what you would type into your search bar if you're looking for her writing. B.A. McRae is the title, and we'll tell you how you can find her work, what websites and that, as we go along here. But we're putting a little bit of the cart before the horse, I am, because I wanted to dive into publication. And you mentioned to us in the beginning of the interview, Bria, you just published this like not even 48 hours ago, really. I suppose we're recording this on Friday. It is being played
recently,
on Sunday.
Recently
is a better way to word that. So Bria, what we wanted to get into now is the publication process. Can you explain a little of how that works and how people can do that themselves?
Yeah, of course. Thank you for asking. I publish my ebook through Kindle Direct Publishing, which is Amazon's publishing company, and I also publish it on B&M Press, which is Barnes & Noble's publishing company, and all of that can be done online. I was able to publish on two different platforms because I had purchased the ISBN for the ebook with the encouragement and support from my loved ones, and therefore I own the rights and I'm technically the publisher. And you can buy your own ISBN for your book on Bowker.com. And Kindle Direct Publishing and B&M Press do have an option where you can use one of their own ISBNs, so you don't have to purchase your own. And I know it's not possible for everyone to buy their own, but if you can, I think it's the right way to go, so you own the rights to your work.
Boy, you know, that is a great point. That if nothing else, then you don't have to worry about issues in the future if something happens. Boy, that is the way to go. If, like she said, you were able to afford it.
Yeah, exactly.
I really admire so much about this younger generation, and one of the things that I notice is that these young artists, no matter what field they're in, they want to own their work, and that's important, and they should. Everybody should.
They're very smart about it, yes.
I mentioned it before. I'm not a Taylor Swift fan or anything, but I respect the daylights out of what she's doing, re-recording her work and possibly hurting herself with future album sales because she's not putting out new music necessarily right now. She's trying to re-own her music. Re-own her work and everything. I think a lot of people, even though that it didn't happen during their generation, grew up hearing the story of Michael Jackson and Paul McCartney, who were very, very good friends. But when Paul has this open agreement with Michael Jackson that, hey, I'm going to buy the Beatles catalog, and Michael kind of says, that's cool, all right. And then Michael ends up outbidding him and buying the music.
Right out from under him, yep.
And like weeks later, months later, all of a sudden the Nike commercial comes on, and we see Revolution in the Nike commercial. And I've never seen my father more disgusted by anything that he's seen on TV maybe than that.
Wow.
And how he felt about it. Like, to this day, he still talks about like how upset he was about that and everything. I think that story has played on a lot of people, and so you have a generation of kids that have been raised by parents that had that story, and we're seeing more of this. So I think those are really good points, Bria, and just fun for people to understand that they can be published like that.
Yeah, exactly, and I always want to be an open door to information about self-publishing because there are so many stories out there, and I feel like it's time for them to shine.
Yeah, great way to put it.
So what's something you think people will enjoy about this story?
Well, thank you for asking that. And I've actually been very grateful to have had some readers already reach out to me about their feelings towards the story so far. And what I've heard is that along with the premise of the story being unique and kind of out there, is that readers are really enjoying the two main characters and my style of writing. And that was a huge compliment because I had only ever thought about the greats having a style of writing pinned to them. So that comment actually made me tear up a little bit. It was very kind. There are cute Christmas moments mixed in with tragedy and poorly timed jokes, along with some action. And I actually tackle a big question of what is the meaning of human existence, with which the main character, Otto, has been grappling with since he was a teenager.
Ooh, wow. That sounds like a lot to put in a short story.
Yep. You'll have to find out for yourself, I guess.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Also, what I like about that, Bria, is, you know, I think that this time of year we tend to feel almost a weight on our shoulders with the holiday spirit and being in a good spirits and being in a good mood, but not everybody is, and some people have harder times. I think that the empathy that this can create, just reading these stories, and even if they are fictional characters, seeing that, hey, I'm not alone here, somebody else is going through some hard times, is very unique. And any time can help people with that, I think, is a healing process part of it. The other part of this, it says, you know, in hearing you talk about that, comes to mind, Bria, is it's a subject matter that obviously, as Seth touched on earlier, it isn't happening right now, but it's interesting how realistic the story can get, even with a kind of make-believe subject matter.
Oh, thank you so much. That is really kind. I feel I'm a lot of lost for words.
Do you think that it does that? Do you think you've been able to pull that off?
I'm sorry, could you phrase the question again?
Do you think you've been able to create that with this story, a realistic story about an unrealistic, you know, or you know, a concept that isn't happening?
I humbly will say that I believe I have. That is also something that a reader was telling me, that they just flew by the first few chapters because they were so immersed in this reality and it felt very real to them. So that was nice to hear, some reassurance.
I have to agree with you. I have to agree with that comment that you got from that reader, because you have one of the more unique voices, writing styles that I've seen, that I've come across. I've read many, many authors, and your word selection, I never really thought about that before, but I love the word selection you have and the way that you carry. You can tell when one person is talking when another isn't. As a writer myself, I've struggled with that for years, and I think that it's something you got a hold of right away with your writing. Something people can look forward to going into your stories.
Thank you so much. That really means a lot to me.
I'm just reading what you wrote for me. I'm just... No, I'm kidding.
Oh, no, I've been exposed.
She's too good of a writer, see? We all, it was right in her style, too.
Bria laughs, and then I say... No. What do you got next, hon? What's coming up next for you?
Well, a few months ago, I finished writing the sequel to I've Never Danced, which was my debut novel. So that book is I've Always Loved, which will be going through the publishing process sometime in the next year. As far as writing goes, I'm now going to be focusing my creative attention on a play script that I've been adding to here and there.
That's very exciting. And I'm not saying that for any selfish reasons whatsoever.
At all? No selfish reasons at all?
I'm very excited about that. I also wanted to make sure that we mentioned your podcast in there. I only follow about 3 or 4 podcasts, and yours is one of them. The High Ho Pistachio Podcast. Bria, where can people get that podcast, and do you have any previews or any guests coming up that you wanted to tell us about?
Yeah, thank you for asking. Well, you can listen to it on, I believe, Apple, Google, and Spotify podcasts. And this month, the last Friday of December, I will be having a guest named Aubin, and he does animations and funny short videos on YouTube that have gotten quite a wave, and just talking about creative stuff and, yeah, all the fun that goes into that.
Very cool. Very cool. Really enjoyed the podcast and your interviewing style. It's been very fun to listen to, and I encourage others to check it out. Again, wherever you get your podcast, the High Ho Pistachio Podcast, be sure to download, check it out, and take a listen. Really appreciate the time with you, Bria. So Seth and I, one of the things we were going to do with the show today was kind of discuss best holiday movies. And I wanted to do this in two different categories, new school and old school. So I have here a list in front of me of some of the best holiday movies that came out in the 2000s. And then we kind of go over some of the old school movies. But before we let you go, Bria, we got to make you do a little work here. I need to put you on the spot. Tell us your favorite or some of your favorite Christmas movies.
Ooh, okay. So my favorite Christmas movie, which when I think of a favorite Christmas movie, it's one that you look forward to every year. You don't get tired of seeing it. Maybe you even watch it out of season because it's so good. And mine is A Muppet Christmas Carol, which came out in 1992.
Yes. Oh, my wife is so happy right now. She has no idea why. She loves it, too. It's just one of her favorites.
Well, she has good taste. That is a great movie.
It's so good. It's so good. I like your criteria, too. I like the way you preface that. That's pretty good. That's a good
way to
put it.
You will watch even out of season. You know, you do that a lot when you're a kid. You'll watch, you know, if you like something, you'll watch it out of season. If it's a Christmas thing, Halloween, whatever, doesn't matter. But if you're doing that as an adult, man, you must really like that. Yeah. You must really like that thing.
Yeah. Gosh, that's a great suggestion. One of the other things I was thinking about, too, because earlier the other day, I interviewed Senator Tustin, and I asked him, you know, what's one of your favorite Christmas movies? He's like, I know it's controversial, but I got to say, Die Hard. And I thought it was a funny response and everything.
That's pretty good.
My favorite Christmas movie is also my favorite Halloween movie, The Nightmare Before Christmas. With movies like that, with Die Hard, these other things, do you guys think we should also come up with like subcategories here where there's Christmas movies that are just, you know, like A Muppet Christmas or something like that, where Christmas is in the title.
Right.
And then there's these movies that kind of, you know, they happen around Christmas or on Christmas, but they're not necessarily Christmas movies.
Yeah. Anything by Shane Black. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a movie.
Why does he put so many of his movies around Christmas? I don't understand that.
He doesn't even seem to like Christmas that much. I don't get it. One of my favorite movies, especially of the 2000s and going forward here, is a movie called Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Val Kilmer, Robert De Niro, or Robert Downey Jr.
Yep. Black.
Shane Black. Again, that's directed that. I didn't even think about that. And you just said it. Oh, I didn't even think about that. Actually, it's part of the reason why I thought of it. But it's such a good movie. It's written well. I love the characters and everything. But that's a movie that makes me think of this. It happens around Christmas. Christmas is a storyline a little bit, but it's not a Christmas movie. You wouldn't consider it necessarily that.
Last Boy Scout, Iron Man 3.
Yes.
He's got this obsession with Christmas.
It really does, yeah. Is there an old school Christmas movie that you still enjoy or that you enjoyed growing up, Bria?
Well, I don't know if this qualifies as old school, but Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, also 1992, it always gets me. My fiance and we actually watched it last night, and we were just laughing like two goony kids because it was too funny.
I feel very sad having to say this, but I think that counts now.
Oh yeah, James. Yeah, I think it does. I think it does. Yes.
Man, now I feel old.
I feel very old. Yes.
Sorry, guys.
It happens. Yeah, it happens. Bria, we cannot thank you enough for joining us. This has been a lot of fun. We've really enjoyed catching up with you. You and I will see each other very soon and talk real soon. But I want to wish you very, very happy holidays to you and yours. Thank you so much for joining us in the time. One more time, can we tell people how they can get your podcast and how they can get your stories?
Yes, you can listen to High Hope Pistachio on Apple, Google, and Spotify podcasts. And you can purchase The World Ends Christmas Day by B.A. McCrae on Amazon and Barnes & Noble for $3.99. And also, if you're looking for an inexpensive last-minute Christmas gift for a bookworm, there you go.
Oh, good point.
Yes, very nice.
Sell those books. There you
Not
go.
Not just a great creative, but a great seller, too. Yeah. Great salesperson.
Got to be your own marketing. Advocate now. Yes. That's right.
Thank you again.
Thank you guys
so
much for having me on. It was a lot of fun.
Appreciate the time. We'll talk soon.
Thanks very much for being with us here on Director's Cut. We'll be right back with some more of the show right after these few messages.
Welcome back to Director's Cut, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. How great was that, man? That was a fun interview.
That was a great. I just love the idea that we can continue to bring people back to talk about what they're doing now. So it's not just thing. And then when her next novel publishes, I'm sure we'll bring her back on again, have another great conversation.
We were wrapping up the conversation with Bria, talking about best Christmas movies of the 2000s, best old school movies. That's kind of where we're going to go now. And this comes to us thanks to our friends at Yahoo.com. They came out with a list of the to get you in the holiday spirit, the best Christmas movies of the 2000s. And this kind of got this ball rolling in my head.
Sure, yeah.
Me going down this rabbit hole. So looking at this list, the number 10 movie they have is An Arthur Christmas from 2011.
Okay.
Haven't seen that one, but Arthur was a very popular character.
The cartoon, I'm guessing.
I think
Arthur,
so, yeah.
Yes.
Although, I would love it if there was an Arthur Christmas movie with Dudley Moore and Liza Minnelli. No. I'll tell you, I love Christmas. It's a beautiful time of year. I say, what day is it, actually? Is it really? How about, maybe we missed something there when he was alive.
Yeah.
Dudley Moore as Scrooge.
That would have been a fascinating study.
But like him playing Arthur, like basically playing Arthur, but as Scrooge.
As Scrooge.
Like, oh, man. Way to go, Hollywood. You missed that one.
Missed the boat on that one.
That would have been good.
That would have been good.
Number nine is The Night Before from 2015. I'm not familiar with that one.
Me neither. Nope.
I am with number eight, A Very Harold and Kumar Christmas from 2011. Geez. Yeah. Kind of funny. That was pretty funny. It was pretty good. Doogie, before he is a household name again,
yep.
Neil Patrick Harris
yep.
was in that. And this is before like How I Met Your Mother and all that
that's
and everything.
Right, yeah.
So he was kind of building his star back a little bit. And he plays himself in it. And it's hilarious. Man, that guy is talented.
You something.
Number seven, Serendipity from 2001.
I've never seen it, but I know a little bit about it. It's one of those, they kind of flip the whole romantic meet cute thing on the head where they keep missing each other kind of thing until the very end. So I heard that's very popular around this time of year, though.
I know it stars my boy John Cusack and I believe Catherine Zeta-Jones. I think Billy Crystal's in it as well. I haven't seen it probably since, 01 or anything.
Yeah, that's but, right,
it was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Number six on the list, Bad Santa from 2003.
Again, another one I haven't seen, but I've heard that's pretty good.
It was okay. I didn't think it was that bad. It also felt like an excuse to see Santa swear. Like that's kind of what it felt like.
And drink.
Yes.
And not, you know, and we see drunk Santas in a lot of movies, but maybe just to excuse it that time, right?
It that's a good point. We've seen drunk Santas. I don't think we've seen drunk Santa as the lead actor.
No, we
before.
Have not. It's always
Billy Bob bad Thornton. Santa. It's Billy Bob Thornton doing what Billy Bob Thornton does in movies.
Yeah, exactly.
Number five on the list, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang from 2005.
Which you mentioned just a little bit earlier. That was an interesting one because I remember that was when Robert Downey Jr. was coming on the comeback trail.
Yes. Yeah.
And Val Kilmer was kind of easing towards retirement, I guess, because he's not really been, since then, he's been really quiet. He's just haven't done much.
It was part of the reason why I remember being excited to rent the movie, because I'm old and I rented the movie.
Right.
that's what we used to have to do, kids.
Yeah, exactly.
And I love both those actors so much. Mm-hmm. And again, this is before Iron Man, as Seth said. This is Val Kilmer. Kind of seeing the end of the light at the end of the tunnel here a little bit and going into it knowing but not knowing those things as a young actor. I came out of it realizing, I have to really appreciate Val Kilmer here.
Yes.
And I am so thankful that Robert Downey Jr. got this second break. Mm-hmm. I had no idea that Iron Man and Sherlock Holmes, nobody had any idea all that stuff
was
coming.
That was going to explode, but
I was just excited to see one of my favorite actors again.
Yep.
That movie will always be special to me, I think, because of both of those storylines that really weren't in the movie, but they were outside
the
of the
two different trajectories that the actors were on. It's very interesting at that time and place.
Well put. Number four in the list, The Christmas Chronicles from 2018, a more recent movie. I have not seen that one.
That's familiar. I wonder, do you have anything about who's in it? Because I'm like, I can't. It sounds familiar, but I can't remember if I've actually seen it or not.
It does sound
if it's like a Disney thing or something like that. But, oh, man, it's driving me crazy.
The Christmas, I feel like it should be right on the tip of my tongue, or the actors at least should
be. Okay, right.
Yep, that's what it is. So this is the one with Kurt Russell as Santa.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay, I haven't seen it, but I remember seeing about it. Yeah.
It's got Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn. So it's got them, Mr. and
Mrs.
Claus.
That would be one worth seeing just to see those two together.
I'm mad at myself I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Now that I'm remembering it and everything. Those two are two of my favorites, and anytime you get to see them work, I still watch Overboard. I'll see if I see it on TV, I'll still watch it because I love those two.
Yeah, you're the only one.
Pretty much, yes. Number three on the list, The Holiday from 2006.
The Holiday. I'm not familiar with that one.
No. And it's so weird between the two of us to come across movies that we haven't seen or unfamiliar with.
I don't watch a lot of Christmas movies. That's the thing.
Same.
I've got the old Standby, which we'll be getting to in a second. You know, those ones I love. I watch them every year kind of thing. But the newer ones, I don't know. A lot of them I just, eh.
I have only two blind spots when it comes to this field, and it is sometimes Christmas movies and a lot of rom-coms. Like, I have not seen a lot of those. And that leads me to number two on the list, Love Actually from 2003.
This is a film that apparently has gained a large cult following since it came out, because I don't remember it being a huge hit when it came out in 2003, but since then... Are you kidding me? I mean, this is like a thing that people, we got to watch it every year kind of thing. Again, great cast.
Oh,
an amazing cast.
Just Hugh Grant, Colin Firth, Emma Thompson, Liam Neeson, Keira Knightley, Alan Rickman. One of the most eclectic cast. Bill Nighy. Martin Freeman, I should mention. Andrew Lincoln. It was where I found out about Andrew Lincoln.
That's right. Yeah.
Really fell in love with him after that.
Yep.
You got Mr. Bean in there. Rowan Atkinson's in it as well. Billy Bob Thornton's in this one too. Forgot about that.
Oh, who knew?
All these actors, incredibly good in this. I really loved Andrew Lincoln's performance. But if you are even a slight fan of Mr. Bill Nighy, it is one of his greatest performances.
Just celebrated a birthday recently. Yeah.
It's not only one of his greatest performances, you've never gotten to see him have fun like this as an actor. He's playing a kind of has-been sort of, a guy who had one big hit, and he's kind of still hoping to have that one more hit, even though he's like 40 years older and stuff. And God, he plays it so good. He's so good of an actor.
One of those really brilliant character actors that we don't appreciate enough.
It really speaks to a lot of what we're talking here, or what we were talking about before, about that sub with Bria, that kind of subcat. Oh, Laura Linney's in it too. I just remembered. I love Laura Linney.
Another fabulous actor.
Had to mention her.
Yeah.
This kind of subcategory of Christmas movies, and then kind of Christmas-themed movies, and these differences.
Yeah.
I think Love Actually falls into that. You bring up a great point about the cult following of that movie.
Yeah.
It's one of the strangest things in the game. I couldn't sit there and say, hey, I'm going to create a cult following movie.
No, you can't.
Nobody could do that.
If people have tried and they have failed, it has not worked.
Badly.
Yes.
I believe, if I heard right, that was something they were hoping with Cats, the most recent version of Cats. And no. No.
The only way it will get watched is for ironic reasons. That's the only reason that thing is going to be watched again.
I was joking with a friend of mine who was asking me if I'd seen it. The only way I'll see that movie is when Mystery Science Theater does it.
And I believe Riff Trax did it.
Oh, did they?
Because they were forced to. They didn't want to do it, but they had like a Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And they said, if we get to this level, we're going to do Cats. And they got to that level and they're like, we really didn't want to do this, but all right, you guys want us to do it. So they did it. So you should check it out. I haven't listened to it yet, but I'm guessing it would make at least the movie watchable.
At least watchable.
Yeah.
I want to watch every single one of those, let alone that one. I have to see that one. And number one on the list, Elf from 2003. I think we kind of saw this one coming.
That one makes sense. Not only was it a big hit when it came out, it has spawned a musical. It has spawned an animated special. It has spawned, there's references to Elf all over the place, which is interesting. So I saw Elf for the first time last year. I hadn't watched it yet.
Mm.
And the casting was for the most part good. I remember telling you about this after I watched it. I thought James Caan was woefully miscast in that.
Yeah,
they should have gotten someone else. But Will Ferrell is brilliant, and this is coming from not a big Will Ferrell fan. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of his, but he did a great job as Buddy. Zooey Deschanel did a great job as that. Plus Ed Asner as Santa. Ed Asner is
Thank
Santa.
You. Thank you.
The late lamented Ed Asner. Oh.
I think should mention Peter Dinklage has a wonderful little guest spot in this.
Yes, he does. I forgot about that.
Which he had, apparently he had so much fun doing and was so thankful to have the opportunity because this is, again, before Game of Thrones and everything. And it was a chance for him to play somebody of dwarfism. But, you know, they were able to bring up things that they weren't talking about in movies very often.
No, especially back then, yeah.
And it needs to be mentioned also Bob Newhart. Such a wonderful job by him. Mary Sternberger did a great job too. Amy Sedaris had a nice part in there too.
Yep.
I agree with you about the casting of James Caan.
Mm-hmm.
I liked being as selfishly as a big James Caan fan.
Right.
I liked getting to see him in that role because we just didn't get to see him very often.
That's true.
He smiles in that movie.
That's what it was. It's so weird to see him.
Maybe
smile.
That is it. Yeah. Guys like us, Seth, one of our favorites kind of guys. Not to speak for you.
Yeah.
But just not an undersold actor at many times in his career.
Even though he was a big star for a while, I think you're right. I don't think anyone really took him as seriously as they could have and probably should have.
And now especially, you know, it just kind of look back at, you know, whether it's Bob Newhart, Ed Asner, him. When we lose people and I see them in movies again, I have a new appreciation
for sure
of their work and their skill and their talent. And of course, those two had that in tons.
Yes,
like,
in spades. Yep.
So that is a pretty cool list. And I think a pretty fun list and everything. But now I want to go old school. I want to talk about movies that came out not only when we were kids, but long before you and I were even born.
Before we get to that, I have to get something off my chest, and I already told James about this one, so I have to bring it out because I saw this on a different list of movies from the 2000s because I wanted to do a little research before we did this. One of the movies they listed on this specific list was Christmas with the Cranks.
Oh boy.
And I can't tell you how wrong they are. That is a horrible movie.
Yeah.
I am good. Avoid it at all costs. It has nothing to do with the cast. Tim Allen, Dan Aykroyd, people I like, actors I enjoy, were in it. It's, and I'm going to explain it to people because I don't want you to go out and see it.
Yes, please.
Basically, it's a couple who are famous for their Christmas party every year. You know, they invite the whole neighborhood. They decorate the house to the ninth degree. And they invite everyone over. It's a tradition. Now, their daughter's gone. She's out of the house. They're older. And they're like, well, she's gone. Why do we need to hang around here? Let's go to the Bahamas for Christmas. Let's do some tropical place, right?
Yeah.
And so they get ready to do this. When word gets out, their neighbors are like horrified that they want to go somewhere else.
Hmm.
And I'm like, okay, what's this? So it's weird because that's the first half of the movie. But then in the second half, it shifts gear completely. And it is like a love letter to conformism.
Oh, wow.
It's like, no, you have to do this. Mm. You have to be this person that you've always been. You cannot change. Mm. You cannot grow. And I'm like, they kind of tack on like a happy ending. Oh, the daughter comes back and, you know, oh, it's all wonderful Christmas. No, it's not.
No,
this is horrifying.
It really does sound bad.
My heart was not warmed. I'm like, get out of there. Get as fast
as
you can. So please do not subject yourself to that. They try to make it sound like a good, it's not. No, it's not.
The fact
that they accept it in the end, like with no real argument.
That's
bizarre,
a little
man.
Dangerous, actually. That sounds a little tense.
So anyway, I had to get that off my chest.
Right. As the king of jumping on the soapbox, let me say, you're good. You're good. When we talk about old school Christmas movies, I'm pretty sure we're not alone in this, Wonderful Life, Miracle on 34th Street, some of those kind of movies. Are there any that you can think of, outside of that perimeter?
Yes. The movie that Beth and I watch every year is White Christmas, which is I think most people have seen it now, but it's a classic from the 50s. It's got Bing Crosby and Danny Kaye, Rosemary Clooney. Vera Ellen is the other lady in there. It's a song and dance. All the songs are by Irving Berlin, which is good. Some of them are old ones, but he also wrote some new ones for the movie. This is interesting. It's directed by Michael Curtiz, who was also the man who directed Casablanca and several other classic movies. He was one of those guys that could direct basically any film.
Yes.
And it's so much fun. It's got a lot of great humor in it, a lot of great songs, tons of great dancing in it. If you like Hollywood dancing, this movie has got it, and just super. I mean, you get some of the best dancers you've ever seen in your life on this thing.
Yeah.
Plus, it's got the story is kind of, I'll admit it, it's kind of hokey.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the greatest story, but Bing Crosby and Danny Kaye together. I mean, come on.
It's one of the better
singing
combos.
Together,
yeah.
Doing comedy together. They had so much fun. Later on, Bing Crosby said that he laughed more on this set than he ever did on the movies he did with Bob Hope because of Danny Kaye.
Wow.
That's how much he loved working
with
him.
That is really a statement. That's pretty cool. I'm glad you brought up Michael Kurtz, too.
Yes.
I don't feel like his name gets mentioned nearly enough. And I don't know many directors that have an IMDb so much variety as he did. And not just the variety. It's one thing to do these movies. It's another to hit after hit, like in different genres. That's so impressive.
And I think part of that stems from he had the reputation of being very hard on his actors. Mm-hmm. He was very strict. He was very one of these kind of directors. And that can play into, your after reputation, right? It happens.
Yeah,
it really does.
Yeah.
But some of the work, I mean, Casablanca speaks for itself. It's probably one of the greatest movies ever made.
Easily.
And all these other ones, and one of my favorites, like White Christmas. So,
And then there's some I don't know, not necessarily old school, but movies that you know, came out not in the 2000s or maybe a little bit in the late 90s or 80s or, the 80s what or have something, you. Right. I mentioned A Nightmare Before Christmas earlier as one of my favorites. I think a lot of the cartoon specials, the Charlie Brown Christmas, the How the Grinch Stole Christmas, Jack Frost.
Yes. Or the all those Rankin and Bass claymation ones, the Rudolph and Santa Claus is Coming to Town, where they got some great voice performances. They got Fred Astaire, Burl Ives. I mean, some of the great voice acting in those, too.
Jimmy Durante.
And Frosty, yep.
That's so good. Frosty the Snowman was the other one I wanted to mention there. Then there's those movies that kind of hit that fringe, like Home Alone or A Christmas Story. Christmas Story is certainly one of the more celebrated cult movies, really.
Boy, talk about a cult movie,
Yeah. How many people have one of those leg lamps, you know? Like, who would have thought that was going to be popular out of that one or anything? The Red Rifle, you know.
The Red Rider Rifle. By the way, I got one of those when I was a kid as a Christmas present. Nice. A BB gun, a Red Rider BB gun, I did.
And we mentioned some others already, but I think another one that has to be mentioned is National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. it was really one of the first movies that gave you, hey, not every family is perfect. You know,
true.
It showed a little bit of a light, kind of Married with Children for the movie world, where we're getting away from more and more of, hey, not every family's perfect, and this idea of the old 40s, 50s way of doing it, like, oh, we can only show perfect families on TV.
Yeah, right.
We're getting away from that more. And I think that was important. Representation matters. And I think if, you know, nobody came from a perfect family. So it was nice. It was helpful.
That's right. I've never watched it all the way through. I've seen bits and pieces, chunks of it.
Yeah.
Just because it's not really, that humor is not really my cup of tea, but I understand where it is in the pantheon. It's a classic that people really love around this time of year. For that time period, it's actually where my favorite Christmas Carol adaptation comes from. Ooh. It was a TV movie, I guess, from 1984. It's the one with George C. Scott. And for my money, George C. Scott is the best Scrooge ever.
Easily.
First of all, one of my all-time favorite actors. He was so good in everything he was in. Gosh. But the way he plays Scrooge, he really, especially at the beginning, he hit the grumpy Scrooge like spot on. He did it better than I think anyone has done it before. And he did a good job with the happy Scrooge too.
Yes.
But the one before, totally believable that this guy is this awful, grasping person.
I in high school, I watched Patton and that back to back.
Oh, wow.
Because I'm such a big George C. Scott fan. And man, I did something similar with James Cagney, where I watched Yankee Doodle Dandy and Public Enemy Public Enemy number one. It just speaks, you really get an idea of how good these guys are, how talented these actors are when you do that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it shows how crazy I am. honorable mention I want to get in really quick, Scrooged. One of my all-time favorites.
Another good Christmas Carol adaptation, yep.
My best friend and I went and saw this in the theater.
Oh,
and,
wow.
God, it was so good. Of course, Bill Murray. But the cast is undersold. First, Karen Allen doesn't get a lot of credit as a good actress, and she was so good.
Karen Allen was awesome.
She really was. But the great Carol Kane, I have to mention.
Another great one.
Alfred Woodard in that one is John Forsythe, John Glover. Robert Meacham is in it. Brian Doyle Murray. John Murray. There's so many great people in that movie. Just a great one. I have to mention that one as well. Just a good one to fit
another in. One that's become a very much a cult classic in the years since it came out. So, well, I think we've exhausted that topic. I think we got through that one.
Especially, we did it right toward. We didn't run out of material because our next episode is going to be our Christmas episode of Director's Cut. We're going to get the James gang together, penned by Seth there. Melissa and Seth and James, all of us are going to get together.
Yep.
And it'll be sort of for the audience, that especially if you listen to the morning show. It's kind of like deleted scenes from the morning show. Is a little bit, which is a very Christmas like spirit to it. We're going to go
more swearing.
A lot more swearing. That was good. We're going to go over like the weirdest Christmas movies. We also are going to have our top five holidays. Each of us will bring that to the table.
Yep.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Looking forward to it.
And that'll be on Christmas Day, everybody. Yeah. Because a quick mention, it's going to come at the end of our 30 hours of Christmas. Also have a special polka show that you've heard, and a special Seth Faces the Music as well. All Christmassy stuff. Lots of Christmas stuff going on here at WFHR. Thanks for joining us, everyone, for Director's Cut.